Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Good morning to you after a crazy, couple of months here on this very radio show. Ann Beale is in the studio, and we had, so there's good news. We had most of the candidates running at some point for mayor of the city on the show talking about companion animals. And, you know, who would have ever thought that pets would be a topic worth talking about in a election of a city this large, as large as Chicago? So the good thing is that I will say I elevated that topic into one worthy of discussion. One candidate we didn't have on was Toni Preckwinkel, so we're going to try to get her on. And Lori Lightfoot was on. We're going to try to have her on again. But I think it's great that pets were talked about, and in a reasonable way, as a sort of a campaign issue.
Issue. Absolutely.
Why is it a fabulous and important issue?
Because pets are increasingly gaining an importance in people's lives. They have become family members. And so it's important that we think about all of our family members, and it's important that we advocate for them, and that our leaders think about those people in our lives and those animals in our lives. So it's not an unimportant issue.
Yeah, and most people do have a pet. In fact, the candidates were surprised to learn that there are actually, not only in Chicago but across the country, there are more pets in America and in Chicago than there are children, actually. I'm not diminishing the need to talk about schools by any stretch of the imagination, but there are actually more pets.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that we're going to be talking about today, and you have a long history being involved with companion animals in Chicago, with topics like trap, neuter, release, which you are a supporter of Colony Cats. You've written about the topic. But this book is called Heartfelt Connections, How Animals and People Help One Another. Where did you get the idea of doing this book?
I actually got the idea from my work as a colony caretaker. And I had three cats who were brought to me through the Cats at Work program. And I became really fascinated by them because not only did they get rid of my rat problem,
yes,
which is kind of amazing, but they became beloved members of my community. And so I started to think about ways that animals are helping us. And that's where I got the idea for the book. So I went out and did research on a lot of different types of animals, everything from sheep to birds to ducks to llamas even, to pigs, and of course, cats and dogs, and was surprised to learn at how these animals are really important and how they can make a big difference for a lot of people.
I happen to be, first of all, our phone number, 312-981-7200. You could text, you could call, 312-981-7200. If you happen to be on my Facebook fan page, you could watch all of this there or at WGNradio.com. So you're ahead of us. I'm on the board of the Human Animal Bond Association. And at this last board meeting, we all agreed it's great we're talking about the human animal bond with dogs and cats, and we're paying attention to it. We're aware of more and more every day. More studies come out about how animals in unexpected ways sometimes are very, very good for us. I just attended a conference where one of the speakers went through the history of how animals have been used since forever, Hippocrates, in medicine. Actually, and it's not, in some ways, it's not a new thing. The science of it is relatively new. But the idea of human beings doing this without being aware of why they were doing it so much, but they did it, goes back thousands of years, actually. But this includes all animals. And you were kind of ahead of us when you wrote the book. You know, when you think about it, And I've talked about this with veterinarians who have supported this notion that, for example, you're not a beekeeper, I don't believe, Anne. But if
I am not.
But if you were, you would actually potentially have a bond that you create with those bees.
Absolutely.
And zookeepers with the animals that they care for, whether they be impala or that big wet hippopotamus. I think they're wet. Whatever it might be, develop a bond with those animals. And it isn't limited to dogs and cats. Now, the relationship that we have may be limited to dogs and cats, and dogs in particular. But can you comment on all of that?
So I think the bond is something that can be forged between any two mammals. I mean, I believe that in fact there's anecdotal.
Do they have to be mammals?
Could they don't be, have to be. Could they could be pets, bees. They could I mean, and people talk about saving a little squirrel or a chipmunk or saving any number of different types of animals and creating a bond with them. Penguins, I think there's an example of that where there's a penguin who swims 1,500 miles every year to see someone who saved him in New Zealand.
Wow.
And there's some anecdotal evidence of dolphins actually saving some surfers from shark attacks. So there's lots and lots of examples of places where there is a bond that's created or the animal has helped the person. And so I think that because we tend to think about, the animals in our home, we don't tend to think about the animals that are outside of our home as being creatures that we can form a bond with. But I found that there was evidence, in fact, that we do that with all kinds of animals, I mean, ducks. I think one of my examples actually is birds, which most people don't think of birds as being creatures that you form an attachment to. But I went to an exotic refuge where they save exotic birds. And there was a bird that flew over and sat on my shoulder the whole time. Extremely comforting presence. And, they said, oh, that's that bird's personality. Really likes to be in the thick of things, Really likes to reach out to the newcomers, But it's interesting. If we actually watched and listened to animals as much as they talk to us, I think we would hear a lot more of the messages that they are giving us.
Now, I guess you wouldn't want to be... The book is Heartfelt Connections, by the way. How animals and people help one another. You wouldn't be wanting to, I don't think, if you're on a safari in Africa, walk out of the vehicle right in the middle of a pride of lions saying, I'm here, and expect them to say, pet me, they are after all lions.
Right.
Having said that, though, do you think that Jane Goodall all these years has been right, Dr. Goodall, when she says we are all interconnected in ways we don't even quite yet understand?
I think we are incredibly interconnected. And I think that movie Born Free is a good example of a connection that occurred with a lion. Elsa the lion was saved by a couple. And in fact, after they reared her and sent her on her way, she used to come back, I think, every year. In fact, she came back with her cubs one year to visit. So there is a connection even with that kind of an animal. But again, yes, I absolutely agree with you.
I think Norman, was that
Norman, the... not just a pig. One of my favorite animals that I flew to Dallas, actually, to meet him. Who wouldn't? And I think most people think of pigs as either kind of gross or kind of, maybe not so smart. But in fact, pigs are incredibly intelligent. And Norman was able to recognize language. In fact, when she said the word mom, he went over and touched the word mom on a board in front of him, and it said mom.
Really?
Yeah, he was able to recognize. He did all kinds of interesting things. He had little tricks that he wanted to perform, and they told me that he absolutely got so angry if he was not given a certain level of intellectual stimulation and given those little tasks to do. He would go over to the stove, pull out one of the most noisy parts of the stove and bang it on the floor. He was so upset because he really needed that intellectual stimulation. Incredibly emotional, intelligent creature. And she would bring him around to schools where he would help de-stress kids as they were heading towards exams. Kids loved him.
I imagine they did. What is another example, maybe a dog example, that more of us can relate to, that you found in your book? And I know there are lots of them. There's a group right here in Chicago called Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy, And you kind of followed those guys for a while.
I actually went on several visits with them. I went to an intensive care unit for children, a pediatric intensive care unit And I was amazed to see this little dog, Abby, was a completely different dog with every single child. Much more sensitive to the humans than I think maybe we are. And with a kid who was super hyper, she was really fun and playful. With a kid who was a little bit sad, she was a little bit more nurturing. But really impressive dog. And I went also to watch a dog give a child therapy. And this was something where they had the child put necklaces around the dog's neck, and then they had the dog walk on a treadmill and stuff with the child. So, you know, but I saw incredible miracles, actually, is what I saw. And horses as well. I had a chance to watch them give therapy as well.
Well, the true meaning of animal-assisted therapy. So there are many kinds of animal-assisted activities, but animal-assisted therapy means that the handler of that, usually dog, is going to work with a therapist on goal-directed therapy.
Right.
So if the child needs, for whatever reason, to move, the dog is what motivates, or whatever animal it is, that child to move, maybe on a treadmill, where traditional therapists aren't able to do it. The dog is motivating in a way that we cannot be. Did you find that?
What I found was that when I interviewed the parent of this child whom I watched interact with this dog in therapy, he told me that his daughter absolutely worked 10 times harder when the dog was there. In fact, if the dog wasn't there, she actually wasn't as motivated to do her work. But she was very clear, Marco, Marco, you know, and that, you know, she was doing all kinds of things with Marco. Now, I mean, when I was finished with this therapy session, the dog was exhausted. The dog had worked incredibly hard, and they had actually figured out a whole plan. It looked kind of like play, but it was all very scripted. And the dog was a part of this. The handler was actually part of the all of the different exercises that the physical therapist came up with. And I was so impressed. This little girl was talking about walking without, you know, a walker. And Marco was going to help her do that. And it was very clear that he was.
We have some interesting texts I want to get to, and I'm grateful for those. 312-981-7200. You can call us if you prefer to do that. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on WGN 720. Steve Dale right here, WGN Radio. One of the texts, Ann Beale is the guest, Heartfelt Connections, How Animals and People Help One Another, reads, love your show, Steve. My adult daughter, a veterinarian, rescued a 3-year-old poodle dachshund mix. Rescue didn't share this information, but the dog has submissive urination. They might not have known about that, actually. Sometimes dogs in shelters don't exhibit some of these behaviors. Mm. Or maybe the dog was at a foster home and didn't exhibit it. I don't know. The sweet pup feels she's done something wrong at times and will urinate. That's not why they do it. Currently wearing a diaper. Okay. I could see a mental picture of a dachshund running around with a diaper.
Oh, yeah.
She crates her at night when she's at work, does the same. You know what? With submissive, here's the sort of 101 on this. When people come into the house, and when she comes into the house, ignore the dog until the dog calms down. Don't reach out over the dog. That's intimidating to dogs. Instead, let the dog come to you. I could see this little dog with the helicopter tail going back and forth, and actually sit on the floor if she's able to do it. If she's a veterinarian, she knows a lot of this stuff. And reward the dog by taking her out instantly outside so she does the business out there and not in the house. And don't make a big deal about the dog when she comes in. Just wait. Let the dog make the calls. Let the dog calm down. It's overexcitement combined with a lack of confidence, if you will. So a dog training class, positive reinforcement only, please, wouldn't be a bad idea for this dog as well. It doesn't matter how old the dog is. It's a 3-year-old dog. It could be a 13-year-old dog. I'd almost say the same thing about going to some structured event or doing something structured with the dog so the dog gains confidence. Dogs can actually benefit by that. Another text is... Steve, I don't know how you can talk about pets when pensions, budgets, schools are more important issues. I didn't say they weren't, did I? Did I, Ann?
No, I think you said that you were not saying that.
Exactly. But people say what they want. That's okay. So the book is called Heartfelt Connections, How Animals and People Help One Another. Okay, so you did this book, but you didn't just write these stories. And you didn't just write the stories. You went and visited and really did it as a reporter, if you will.
Yes.
But you also explain what you do for a living. And that will explain why you the book is also filled in the back with data, more data, and more data.
So I do market research for a living, and I have a small firm in Chicago where we do a lot of research for Fortune 100 companies.
And not that small.
Not that small.
No.
14 employees. And so we were interested in understanding how the everyday animal in our home makes a difference for us. And so we conducted a survey with 1,500 Americans to understand, you know, how do animals help them? And we found some really surprising things. But one of the things that I like to say and quote is one finding, which was that caretakers say that the animal in their home makes them feel that the world is a better place.
Hmm.
That's a big impact. I don't know of any anything that does that. You know, if there was a pill that did that for you, you would sell out immediately.
Well, all right, so that's a very important point. So I talked very early in the program about how there are, in fact, more pets than there are children. That's what I got yelled about here. You know, but there are, like it or not, good or bad, there are more pets than children in America. To my knowledge, Ann, no public official has yet said you must have a pet. It is a decision that we make. Sure. It costs us money to do it. It takes time to do it. It's a responsibility to do it right. But yet we still say, not only in America, but much of the world, that we want to live with another animal. So here's the question with about 60 seconds left. What is it about humanity? Easy question, Ann, no problem. What is it about humanity that attracts us to have something else often in our homes, even more often, 60%, if I remember right, of cats sleep with their people, more than half of all dogs. So actually more cats sleep with their people than dogs is the latest data. So why? Why do we want this?
I think the reason is because, you know, people say, oh, we have pets because they love us unconditionally. I actually think it's the reverse. I think we have pets because we can love them unconditionally.
Ooh.
I think human beings can be disappointing to us. I think we have high expectations of them. And I think we often struggle with human relationships. I don't think we struggle with our animal relationships because at some level we understand them. They understand us, and we love them unconditionally, and I think they feel the same.
Nice. The book is called Heartfelt Connections, How Animals and People Help One Another. The author is Ann Beal. By the way, we're going to do a podcast. You could hear it at WGNradio.com in a couple of weeks, not quite yet. Another book you have out, Cinderella Didn't Live Happily Ever After. Has nothing to do with pets, I presume.
Nothing.
Nothing to do with pets. What is that all about? You can hear the podcast in a couple of weeks and find out.